This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyi. Today we'll be discussing urinary incontinence. What happens when you're unable to control your urine? Such a basic and necessary function can lead to many complications in your daily life. Now, according to the Ministry of Health, up to 30% of Malaysian women have had urinary incontinence at some point in their lives. So that makes it pretty common, but unfortunately, it's not really commonly talked about or addressed in order to give women relief from the condition. So today I'm going to be speaking to Dr. Sarah Hannah Salvaraja, a consultant aesthetic physician, to find out more about what causes urinary incontinence, why it's more common among women, and more importantly, what can we do to treat this condition. How are you today, Dr. Sarah?
Hi, Shawi. Nice to meet you.
Dr. Sarah, can we start with understanding sort of the process that takes place when we pass urine and how do we control it as well?
Okay. So basically, there are a few organs involved. So if you can imagine our bladder as a balloon, and the opening of the bladder is controlled by two doors, or what we call as sphincters. So this water or urine that's contained inside this balloon is what we're trying to do. So in a normal physiology, so this bladder would probably, we have signals telling them when to contract and when to let these doors open, and that's when we pass urine. Or there are signals telling me to sort of relax, keep the urine in there, keep those doors shut. So when this sign of physiology is in a normal, working normally, we can tell ourselves when and where to relieve ourselves. And that's really important. So what happens sometimes, there's a misfiring or missignaling in this normal process, and that's when we get urinary incontinence.
What causes that misfiring?
It could be due to some diseases, and most predominantly, it's a stress urinary incontinence, which is caused by a weak pelvic muscle. So remember the doors I was talking about? So those doors, especially the lower door, the external sphincter, is sort of controlled or guarded by these pelvic floor muscles. And so when these pelvic floor muscles are weakened, most usually due to aging, post-pregnancy, post-delivery, the whole childbirthing process, even due to menopause, this weak pelvic floor sort of stops that process of holding the urine in. You're not able to voluntarily hold in the urine. And sometimes when external pressure is exerted onto this balloon or bladder, this urine leaks out.
You know, is there a sort of normal range in terms of how much urine we can hold and how long we should be able to hold it for until we have to pass it up?
So usually a normal person would urinate, say, about maybe 8 times. It could vary. So usually if I say about 8 times a day, so if you drink more water or you have more caffeine intake or alcohol intake, it'll probably be increased. Or decrease accordingly. But someone typically who's suffering from urinary incontinence will have two issues. One is they can't hold in as much urine in certain types of urinary incontinence. This would be called urge incontinence. So remember the signaling earlier? So before the bladder can even fill up, there are signals to actually contract these bladder walls, and urine sort of leaks out, especially if the pelvic floor muscles are weak and the doors unable to hold them in. You get this issue of urge incontinence or stress incontinence that we spoke about earlier. The other issue is sometimes the bladder works the opposite way. So the signaling doesn't allow it to contract. It sort of keeps expanding and collecting so much urine that at one point it just leaks out. And usually these are little bits of urine that leaks out uncontrollably.
And this could happen throughout the day, perhaps?
Depends on the type of urinary incontinence. So with maybe I'll just explain a bit about the different types and we'll get into each of it. So the first type of urinary incontinence and the most prevalent one is called stress urinary incontinence. And this is when you typically hear of someone accidentally peeing when they cough or they sneeze or even just laughing, some pee leaks out. So this happens because of the weak pelvic floor, as I was saying. Yep. So what happens is the pelvic floor is unable to hold in the urine and it leaks out. The second type is called urge incontinence. It's exactly that. The urgency is so great because the bladder suddenly contracts even though it's not filled. That gives you that urgency and frequency and need to urine. So this type of urinary incontinence will have someone urgently having to go to the bathroom and not making it in time sometimes. The third type is a mix of the first and the second type. So there's this faulty signaling going on and the bladder is contracting too soon. And there's a weak pelvic floor muscle. So together, this could make it more serious. In overflow incontinence, usually the incontinence happens at night. I mean, throughout the day, you might be leaking a bit of urine here and there and even unable to control it at night. With the fifth type, it's just a neuropathic sort of incontinence, and that would be due to higher center sending the signals, like say from the brain and the spinal cord, and this would be affected in patients suffering from stroke or brain or spinal injuries, and this could go so this incontinence will be sort of like permanent and leaking all the time, not really depending on the time of the day.
You know, when we talk about stress or urge incontinence, you know, where you suddenly pass urine, okay, so stress, if you pee when you've coughed, for instance, or the leaking, right, from the urge incontinence, how much urine coming out are we talking about? Is it enough to, say, wet the underwear? And you know, basically, how uncomfortable does it make the person?
With stress incontinence and overflow, with stress incontinence, we're actually talking about quite a large amount of urine. So it could typically wet the undergarments, or they might have to resort to using pads or diapers because it's quite a lot. The bladder is actually full, and depending on the pressure exerted, the amount of urine could vary. With urge incontinence, it's also a large amount of urine, but the problem is it's sudden. You are not even able to control, you're not coughing, you're not laughing. It just comes out suddenly, and it's usually very debilitating, and there's usually a need for diapers or pads at least, or a change of undergarments all the time.
So let's talk a little bit, and I know you've already mentioned some of the causes, say, you know, pregnancy, aging process. You mentioned for neuropathic incontinence, it's conditions like stroke. Among these, I suppose, which are the most common conditions that would cause incontinence?
So actually, this is quite an interesting thing, because like just a few years ago when I thought about urinary incontinence, what I pictured was somebody, you know, elderly man or woman, probably with grey hair, sitting in a wheelchair. This was the picture that comes to mind. But as I go along now and I talk to my patients about it, and they confide in me about this problem, as I myself go through pregnancy, post-pregnancy, and talk to my peers and friends about this, I find the picture now is totally different. And scarily enough, it looks like someone like me. I see a youngish lady in the 30s or 40s going through this issue.
All right. And why is it so common among women?
I guess it's the whole process. We are dealing with a lot of hormonal changes ever since we reach puberty. And with the whole, we have so many things going on in our life, childbirth, pregnancy, all these sort of things create a weight onto this pelvic floor. And so like say pregnancy, you're having the weight of your uterus, the growing baby, the amniotic fluid, all these sort of weighs down on the pelvic floor, which is essentially a muscle that holds all these organs up. It's holding up the bladder, it's sort of keeping the sphincters in control, or these doors in control. So this kind of weight, even just being overweight sometimes, can cause an issue with the pelvic floor. And it's even made worse in menopause, because we're losing some hormones, and this could also cause weakening of the pelvic floor. More so post-pregnancy, Although it's very common in pregnancy, even post-pregnancy, due to the whole birthing process, you're actually getting a baby out. This could also affect the pelvic floor a lot and lead to a lot of issues of urinary incontinence. And I think that's why it's so common in women as compared to men.
Mm. Can we do anything to strengthen the pelvic floor throughout pregnancy, for instance, so that it doesn't get weakened to that point?
Yeah, in fact, actually, we should start pelvic floor strengthening even before pregnancy because it's essentially a muscle. So the more we build it, the stronger it is, the more it can withhold the pressures and the whole experience of giving birth and the hormonal changes that come along with it. So there's something quite common. It's called Kegel exercises. And it's something that most women should be doing or are usually taught to during pregnancy. But there's a lack of awareness of doing this before pregnancy. So Kegel exercises are, okay, so if you can imagine the pelvic floor muscle, it's basically, imagine a diaper in 3D. The part that's holding the urine, this is the sort of the shape of the pelvic floor muscle. And this is the muscle that's holding up your bladder, your reproductive organs, and even the colon, the ending of the colon called the rectum. So that we want to sort of like contract and relax this muscle, and that's how we're working out this muscle. But the issue comes to locate this muscle. This is quite a tough job sometimes. So if you can actually try to stop urinating midway, and that muscle that you're using during this process, that is actually the muscle we're trying to identify. Although you shouldn't be doing this often, because if you keep stopping urinating midway, it's going to affect you. You could have like urinary retention, which leads to infections. But basically, this is the muscle we're trying to identify. And this is the issue that I usually have in my patients as well, and even for myself, to sort of identify this muscle. So you could try that, the stopping urination midway. But if it's a problem, people could also get a physiotherapist or your doctor to help you to do these exercises. There are also certain biofeedback mechanism equipments or weights that you could use to make sure you're doing it the right way. There's also a latest technology called Amsella, which is a chair with electromagnetic painless waves to sort of teach you how to do this and do it for you. Yeah, there's quite a lot of ways to do this Kegel exercise, and this will be the backbone of strengthening the pelvic floor muscle.
All right. And you're saying that this, we should be doing this even before pregnancy. So, you know, really any young girl or woman should already be thinking about this?
Yeah, probably anyone planning for pregnancy can start to sort of practice Kegel exercises and get the pelvic floor strengthened up.
Yeah. Okay. We'll talk a little bit more about sort of what kind of routine that you need for Kegel exercises. I'm sure it's part and parcel of treatment of incontinence as well. But just very quickly before we go for a break, maybe you could also explain how urinary incontinence occurs in men, because I guess they are affected as well.
Yes, they are. Mostly men, they would suffer from urinary incontinence because of something called an enlarged prostate gland. Something that's just for men, and we don't see it in women because they have a gland that's sort of surrounding the ureter, which is the opening to pass urine. So sometimes this gland, actually in most cases, as men get older, this gland sort of becomes bigger and bigger. If it's too large, it sort of compresses on this opening. So it leads to an obstruction of the smooth flow of urine. And so when this obstruction happens, the urine sort of keeps collecting inside the bladder, and you get that overflow incontinence that we were talking about earlier. So this would be the usual cause for urinary incontinence in men. And even after they go through surgery, say to sort of remove the reduce the prostate gland, they can also have a weakened pelvic floor. Men also have a pelvic floor, not subjected to too much stresses as women, but due to surgery, sometimes they could also have a weak pelvic floor due to aging as well.
And the Kegels exercises would apply to them then?
Good question. So far we have, because men, they usually go in for prostate issues, so it's not really talked about. But yes, I think men can also do Kegel exercises.
Yeah. It's the, because, as you said, it's the same muscle, right? So the motion, the action to control it should be the same then.
Correct. So the muscle is the same. It's just the way of doing these Kegel exercises, because it's so much been catered to women, all these biofeedback mechanisms and the weights are catered to be inserted intravaginally. But the machine, like Amsela, can be done, which like those that sort of like treat the muscle primarily, can be done in men and women.
All right. I'm speaking to Dr. Sarah Hanna Salvaraja, consultant aesthetic physician, about urinary incontinence, and it's really predominantly more common among women. So we'll go for a quick break now, and when we come back, let's look at treatment options as well as some sort of managing your quality of life when you have incontinence. Stay tuned, we'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. Today, I'm speaking to Dr. Sarah Hanna Salvaraja, consultant aesthetic physician, about what are the different types of urinary incontinence, what are the different conditions that cause it, and also how to treat it. So before the break, Dr. Sarah has explained the process involved in passing and controlling urine, and there's something called the pelvic floor muscle that plays a key role in this process. And this muscle, especially in women, gets weakened by hormones, by processes of pregnancy and childbirth. And this can then, the weakening of this muscle can then lead to the inability for the bladder to hold the urine well. And the different types of incontinence, you know, there's stress incontinence. You accidentally pee when you cough or sneeze or laugh. There's also urge incontinence where the bladder just cannot hold the urine, even though it's not full, and usually you can't make it to the bathroom in time. And then there are other types of incontinence as well. But I think what has come through, Dr. Sarah, is that this is not merely an inconvenience in a person's life. It does seem, as you used the word debilitating earlier, and I can imagine how there are many things that would be disrupted in your daily lives and could cause quite a lot of embarrassment and discomfort if you were to be leaking urine or suddenly expressing urine at really the most inopportune times. Are there medical complications, Dr. Sarah, if incontinence is not treated?
Definitely. So every time... the only way to sort of deal with this problem usually that people think about is to use diapers, pads, and as you keep using diapers and pads, sometimes if it's not used hygienically or not changed often enough, it can lead to things like skin allergies or dermatitis, called like something like rashes, and this could actually lead to more severe infections. The other issue we worry about is this weakening of the pelvic floor, because as I said earlier, it sort of holds up the bladder and also other organs like the reproductive organs. So if we keep letting this pelvic floor weaken, it could lead to more severe conditions like prolapse of the organs. What it means is the organs are sort of dropping down, and if it's too severe, there's no choice but to go in for surgical intervention. And so that's why this should be sort of caught early and treated early, so that we can sort of resort to non-invasive treatments and interventional treatments instead of having to go in for surgery.
Mm. I would like to find out from you about the non-invasive treatments in a while. But, you know, I actually think incontinence is so common simply by looking among friends, family members, relatives and acquaintances who've talked about it. And the prevalent opinion seems to be, yeah, what can you do about it? It's, you know, it's part and parcel of being a woman, or it's part and parcel of aging. What do you think about that?
Actually, I myself went through this incontinence. Maybe it's about 7 months now. And so just about a year ago, during my third trimester, I myself had this problem. But I've never really talked about it openly until now, when I'm starting to understand more about this. I try to relate to someone having urinary incontinence. Then I start talking about it. But I think in like the society today, because our Asian culture is sort of quite conservative. Anything revolving around intimate issues are not really discussed, and people prefer to deal with it privately. Just as like you said, they think that, oh, this is just part of growing older. My grandmother had it, my mother had it, you know, I had a baby. Of course, this is normal, but this is the issue that we're, and the barrier that we are trying to break through our Stop the Leak campaign. There's a lot of, maybe they feel that it's a lot of shame and embarrassment around it. And because it's not talked about, some people might actually feel, maybe I'm the only one going through this issue. If I tell someone about it, it's going to look odd or weird, or maybe they're not going to understand what I'm going through. So that's what we're trying to do with this campaign, and sort of tell people, look, this is common, this is normal, and it can be treated, and certain types can be treated, but the important thing will be to break this barrier and get people to just sort of open up about this and normalize discussions surrounding this issue. In fact, many of my close friends and relatives also, when I do see them having the issue and we try to confront people with this issue, sometimes they feel like, oh, maybe I'm just drinking too much water, I'm feeling nervous, and so that's why this happens. It's just very common to feel this way.
All right. So let's talk about those treatment options that you mentioned earlier. What are some ways that incontinence can be treated?
So I guess treatment will actually start at home. So the first thing would be to sort of realize that we do have this problem and sort of confront this problem. So that, I think, is the biggest barrier. So you can like start in your own home, sort of look up information on this in a good way, somewhere where you can trust and open up about this issue, and start with sort of home remedies, like simple things like limiting caffeine, limiting alcohol, or try to limit water intake before sleep. Although this should be taken, because some people try to limit water altogether, and this is a bad thing. We don't want to sort of limit water altogether, because it can lead to dehydration, can lead to infections. But just sort of just before you sleep, that could help if you have a lot of night incontinence. Other than that, the most important thing to start would be pelvic floor muscle exercises. So as we mentioned earlier, these pelvic floor muscles are the one that is holding everything up and keeping the doors closed. So we can start with a lot of pelvic floor muscle exercises and get a physiotherapist to help you with that, or a doctor to help you with that. You can try some, there's something called a biofeedback mechanism. They're also called vaginal weights that you can insert to sort of, so when you contract them, they tell you, okay, right, you're doing it the right way, and you can sort of monitor this process. So ideally, you should be doing about 15 repetitions of these Kegel exercises at least 3 to 5 times a day. So
15 repetitions means 15, can I use the word squeezes for lack of a better?
Yes. That would be it actually. Squeezes.
So 15 repetitions, 3 to 4 times a day?
15 repetitions, 3 to 5 times a day, depending. That's a bit tough to remember sometimes. So just as you're washing the dishes or driving, once you are able to locate that muscle, you're actually able to do that. There's also like those who are having difficulty to locate this muscle, you can also do something called an MCELA treatment. It uses painless electromagnetic waves and stimulates that muscle for you. So it sort of exercises that muscle for you, and you're getting about 11,000 Kegels in about 28 minutes. And that sort of trains you to know which muscle to use.
All right. Is this treatment a one-off thing?
Usually you have to do about 6 treatments would be ideal, and a sort of a maintenance after that. And then once you sort of are able to identify this muscle, and all this muscle is already sort of worked out and is able to contract, then you can sort of do it by yourself at home. Other interventions would also include medications. Your doctor might actually prescribe some medications for you. So depending on the type of urinary incontinence, so we spoke earlier about the uterus, the bladder contracting too soon. So there are certain medications that can sort of relax this so-called overactive bladder, or there are medications that can sort of like contract it easily in cases where the bladder forgets to contract and keeps getting overly distended. There's also interventional therapies that a urologist or a urogynecologist might do, like injecting Botox, actually. Although we don't hear Botox being used in this circumstance, but there is a way of sort of injecting Botox to relax the muscle. Or sometimes the muscle gets too active. We call it overactive bladder, and it contracts before it's even time to contract. So Botox sort of relaxes that and allows the bladder to expand a bit more. Of course, the last resort would be to go in for surgery, and this would be best explained by a urologist or a urogynecologist.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought up the urologist and the urogyne. I was wondering, what is your role as an aesthetic physician? Do you have a role to play in treating incontinence?
So my role is basically just to spread the word, the awareness of this all. We want to normalize this issue, and we are able to start with a non-invasive sort of treatments, but anything that would be invasive or further tested will need to be referred to a urologist or a urogynecologist, which we work closely with.
Just a little bit, Dr. Sarah, about the changes that you've observed in patients that you have come across with urinary incontinence, sort of like a before and after picture, if you could, in terms of how addressing their incontinence problems has been able to change, you know, their activities, their ability to lead a more normal life.
I mean, this has been a really a great experience for me to see how it has affected them. Not medically is one issue, but more in the mental and emotional side of it. So I have had patients who wouldn't even be able to go out for the movies. There's a 1 hour or 2 hour movie will be too much, because they probably need to frequent the bathroom. They need to know where the bathroom is, whether it's close by enough. They have to prepare with extra set of panties, maybe diapers. This is kind of like very emotionally and mentally draining, and creates a lot of anxiety in people. And they decide that, why not go out at all? They decide to stay at home. They decide to not go for family functions. And many of the time, they decide not to travel. Okay, it's good for these COVID times, but in usual circumstances, I think this is very disturbing for them. And the most benefit that so far that my patients have said is that their ability to just sleep through the night, that has been the most relieving thing for them. Because ask a mom of a baby and you will know how important and the joy of just having one whole night of sleep. And it's just something that people with urinary incontinence just don't get. It just becomes automatic. They just get up, and you don't realize that over like a period of time, it sort of disrupts your health as well. I think this was the best part about treating urinary incontinence, and getting them to sort of start enjoying a better quality of life and start embracing life, not and having one thing less to worry about.
There must be significant impact on relationships as well, right? Especially romantic relationships.
Definitely. Surprisingly, because this pelvic floor muscle, these muscles also control muscles required for sexual intimacy as well. So one thing is this gets affected as well. But the other thing is during intimacy, if you happen to leak, that would be a real killer, right? So that was an issue that actually some of my patients also complain about. It takes some time to actually open up about these issues, but definitely this is something we want to treat as well, get over that kind of intimacy issues.
All right. Do you have a final message for us today, Dr. Sarah?
So what I would just like to tell everyone is to sort of, this issue is common, it's normal, but it should get treated. What we want to achieve with our Stop the Leak campaign is to just break the taboo of surrounding urinary incontinence, and we want to provide information and a safe platform for women and men to reach out if they're experiencing any of these issues or any of their family members having any of these issues.
All right. Thank you
so much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sarah. I've been speaking to Dr. Sarah Hannah Selvaraja, consultant aesthetic physician, about urinary incontinence and why it's important to get it looked at by a doctor. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.